Hello and welcome to another edition of the Guardians of the Holy Grail, a program which is dedicated to diving deep to uncover and expose the truth behind the ancient Holy Grail mysteries. Hello, my name is Mark Amato Pinkham, and I'll be your host again today for this show. The Guardians of the Holy Grail show has been created by me to clear up many of the popular misconceptions regarding the Holy Grail mysteries, the Knights Templar, the Freemasons, and all the other secret societies. There's a lot of those kind of misconceptions that are floating around the internet these days and within certain academic circles, and so I'm hoping to kind of set the record straight with hard facts from authors and researchers, as well as testimonials from current and past members of the secret societies. I myself am a Knight Templar of the International Order of Gnostic Templars, which was founded to revive the mystical rites and Gnostic wisdom of the original Knights Templar, which over the centuries has either been lost or ignored. Our Gnostic Knight Templar organization is both a mystical organization as well as a research organization, which is dedicated to discovering the truth, the true mysteries behind the Knights Templar and all the secret societies. If you'd like to know more about us, we do have a website, and it's www.gnostictemplars.org. Today's show, like every show, is dedicated to answering all your questions. So if you have any for myself or our guest, feel free to give us a ring on our toll-free line, 888-815-9756. I'm excited about today's show. We're going to be speaking with a modern alchemist. And I know there's a tendency to think of alchemy as something that happened, hundreds of years ago in some smoky dungeon under a castle someplace. But no, it's continued right down till today. Alchemy has been a very important component of many of the secret societies, including the Knights Templars, who have used alchemy to open up spiritually, to gain health, longevity, and to acquire intuitive Gnostic wisdom. Most of you out there will be familiar with one of the greatest alchemists of all time, Saint Germain, who was an initiate of many of these European secret societies, including the Knights Templar. And so often you'll see in his pictures he's wearing the cross patae, the eight-pointed cross of the Knights Templar. Our guest today is a modern alchemist. His name is Robert Allen Bartlett. Robert learned the art and science of alchemy at the Paracelsus College in Salt Lake City and eventually became the chief chemist of the school until the death of the school's founder, Frater Albertus, in 1984. Robert has since published a book, Real Alchemy, A Primer of Practical Real Alchemy, A Primer of Practical Alchemy, and he currently teaches alchemy, practices alchemy, and the art of spigyrics, which is an alchemical approach to producing herbal medicine. If you'd like to know more about Robert and his work, you can visit his website, which is www.realalchemy.org. So welcome, Robert. Welcome and greetings to the Guardians of the Holy Grail.
Thank you. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, we've been anxious to get an alchemist on the show, and so you'll be our first, and we're really looking forward to hearing what you have to say and what modern alchemists are up to these days. First of all, how exactly did you get started in alchemy?
Well, I think I was born this way. I've had a laboratory of my own since I was just a kid. Ended up filling the house with smoke and a few explosions prompted my parents to move me into a shed we had in the backyard. And I started out with a rock collection, actually. I was interested in rocks, had quite a collection, and found out ways of experimenting on rocks to figure out what they were, and ended up scouring the the local libraries to discover more ways of testing rocks and minerals, and discovered the whole aisle of alchemical books, and just got fascinated with what they were doing with rocks and minerals back in the day. And it's just something that stuck with me all my life. I've been involved with alchemy for the last, at least 40 years.
How much of your time do you actually dedicate to alchemy? I mean, on a normal day, do you dedicate a fair share of your time to that practice?
I always have things going. I have numerous projects, you know, that I'm involved with, herbal tinctures or minerals or metal works, teaching classes, getting ready for classes, that sort of thing. I spend most of my free time either studying or working in the lab. I have a laboratory here now in the Pacific Northwest. And if I'm not actively engaged in work, I'm looking for materials and supplies. So I spend a lot of my time involved in doing the work.
Well, tell me about the college, the alchemical college that you studied in. There aren't a whole lot of those in the States. It was in Salt Lake City, is that right?
Yeah. Frater Albertus, or Dr. Albert Riddell, was he was involved with the Rosicrucians for a number of years back in the 40s. And eventually he started teaching the classes at the Rosicrucian University. And his classes were so popular that everyone wanted to be in his classes, and the other subjects were being neglected, so they tried to tone down the number of his classes, and he eventually broke off on his own and established the Paracelsus Research Society in Salt Lake City. That was in 1960. He taught classes in a graded kind of system. He would teach for, the classes were 2 weeks long, very intense. So you're in there, he could accept like 12 people at a time. And there was a lecture hall and a laboratory with a lecture hall. And they had a library there. And contact with the outside world was discouraged. It wasn't forbidden, but people were cloistered in there for 2 weeks straight. You know, other than to go out and get food and supplies, you were pretty much locked into the whole study and practice of alchemy scene for a two-week period. And classes ran 9 in the morning till 5 in the night. And then laboratory works and homework would go on all night. After the first class, you were given homework assignments to do at your leisure at home in preparation for the next year. So you start off with a prima class, a two-week class, and next year you would come to the secunda class, and then tertia, quarta, all the way up to a septa class. So it was a 7-year program, 2 weeks out of each year, very intense alchemical training in theory and practice of laboratory alchemy.
You were learning spagyrics, am I saying this right?
Spagyrics.
Spagyrics, which is creating herbal formulas, if I'm not mistaken. Now, were you also involved with any other aspect of alchemy?
Yeah, spagyrics is really a word that was coined by Paracelsus, an alchemist in around 1500. It's actually two Greek words, speo and agyron, meaning to separate and to recombine. It's kind of a takeoff on the old alchemical formula of sols and coagula. And it's really not just applied to herbs. A lot of people have that misconception that it's just a way to make herbs. The process is one of separating out the essential components of a material, be it a plant or a mineral, metal, purifying those parts, and then putting them back together into a, in a sense, a resurrected form. And the parts that you're actually taking apart were considered to be the philosophical principles of the material. So everything to the alchemist possesses a body and a soul and a spirit aspect, and that there are material analogs or focal points for these energetic systems. And alchemy provides the means of isolating these focal points, bringing them to a purified state, and then recombining them and, in a sense, resurrecting the plant or mineral in an improved form, an evolved state. In fact, the alchemists called them glorified beings. They were considered to be divine medicines.
Well, last week we had on the show, we had Stephen Armstrong, who was actually one of the leaders of AMORIC, the Rosicrucian organization out in California. And we were talking about Harvey Spencer Lewis, and how he was able to transmute base metal into gold and did some kind of alchemical demonstration in New York City at the early 1900s. So it appears as though if he understood that information, he knew the formula. Was this something that he passed on to Fred Alberta, since he was also involved with this Rosicrucian organization?
That's quite possible. I know of the process that he used, actually a transmutation of zinc metal. Fred Alberta did a few attempts, I think partial success on a couple of them. Whether that was the exact process, I'm not sure. Fra Robertus was very interested in the properties of antimony. It was one of his success stories. Antimony was considered to be a very powerful medicine, although its toxic properties list it right up there with arsenic, which it's associated with, but after alchemical preparation, antimony is a very powerful curative agent. So the transmutation is really more of a test that your materials have been properly prepared. And this is true in in Eastern alchemy as well, you know, in the Far East, in China and India, they also developed alchemy along the exact same lines. And the process of transmuting base metals into gold was really a final test of the medicinal agent to see that if it could transmute metals and improve metals, in a sense, cure metals of their diseases, then they were ready to be applied to a person and cure them of their defects.
Well, throughout history, of course, Robert, the goal has been to discover the Philosopher's Stone and the Elixir of Immortality. And you hear all kinds of stories about the alchemists in Europe, those that were able to discover the formula and those that didn't. I mean, is this something that modern alchemists are still in pursuit of, you know, Philosopher's Stone and the Elixir of Immortality? Is this something that, you know, you and other alchemists are still on the road to try to discover?
Yeah, it's still a goal, certainly. But there are degrees and grades, I would say. the Philosopher's Stone or the Elixir, they're really very much linked together. And in both Western and Eastern alchemy, that was really the goal, is that there are materials out there which could extend a person's lifetime and could cure diseases, if not all diseases, most diseases. That's really, like I say, the transmutation of metals is really kind of a spin-off, testing the medicine to make sure it was ready for human consumption, that metals were considered to have their own types of diseases. And if the same metal, or same medicine rather, could be applied to metals and, in a sense, cure them of their corruptibility, and then the medicine would be deemed suitable for human consumption, which would then adjust the operator or the alchemist's own elemental composition in such a way that he becomes able to channel higher degrees of spiritual energies. His body becomes refined. Diseases are no longer able to get a foothold. Diseases that are there would be cured because tissues are rearranging the electrical and material components of the body are altered. They become transformed, transmuted in a sense. Things like the subtle energy structures, the acupuncture meridians, if you will, or the whole system of chakras, fine energy systems in the body are awakened and cleaned out and brought into balance and harmony with the physical organs so that everything is running at an optimum. And that's really the goal behind the Elixir of Life, is that there are medicines that can bring that about, to bring about not only a physical purification or rearrangement of defects in the body, but also work on spiritual and psychological levels, on a subtle energetic aspect to the medicines.
Well, that's really what I'm mostly interested in hearing about. Do you actively work with a certain formula, alchemical formula, to open yourself up spiritually?
Yeah, the whole process of alchemy is one of doing the work. The work itself teaches. You know, alchemy is an exploration of nature and the true nature of reality and how we fit into that picture. The laboratory work is a demonstration of the principles, the theories behind alchemy are brought into a physical manifestation where you can actually prove and see the alchemical theories up close, see them happening. And then from that, you gain insight into the workings of nature on a whole different level. And so the whole process of alchemy is, you know, they stress to do the work. You must actually tread the path, in a sense, and do the work. You know, you have a little bit of theory under your belt, and then you go into the laboratory and you do some tests or some experiments which are along the alchemical lines, and you see that this theory is holding up and that you're actually holding materials that substantiate parts of the theory, and from that you gain insights into where to go next. So the actual work is one of kind of a self-initiation. Nature teaches you as you go along, and strangely enough, things have a way of showing up just when you need them, and it happens all the time. So alchemy it's kind of a solitary path because there are no set, you know, rituals that you have to follow. Each person will be guided along the path a little differently. But the revelations that will occur in the laboratory are universal languages, things. That's why, you know, psychologists can see the psychology of alchemy in people, because it's a universal language. And in the laboratory, things become very deep-seated and entrenched in the mind, because you've seen them, you've held them, you've done these things, and now, you know, just like going home from work at night, you have dreams about working. Same in the laboratory. You're working in the laboratory all day, and you have dreams about revelations of alchemical principles, things that you may have read in alchemical texts that just made no sense at all, and suddenly it's clear as a bell what they're talking about, because you've done it, you've seen it, and now you've gained some insight on where to go next. And so it's a self-teaching, self-initiation sort of regimen.
Well, what would you say is the closest you've come to discovering the elixir of immortality, or do you know friends or associates that have discovered some sort of elixir? Are you aware of such kind of elixir today? I mean, that's what everyone's looking for on the spiritual path, and they've tried white powder gold and all these different things with you know, various levels of success, but we're still all waiting for you know the real one to come along, you know, and
yeah.
Where is it?
Everyone thinks that it's a matter of, here, you know, take this medicine and call me when you're younger in the morning. It's more than that. It's an evolved process. Just like your material, you know, you don't go into the laboratory and whip up the elixir of life overnight. Some of these experiments take years to complete. They're more like an art project. They take a lot of labor, a lot of intense time and involvement with the materials. So that as you progress in the work, in the laboratory work, you're making medicines that become more and more improved. And as you consume these medicines, they become part of you. You are what you eat. You know, and so your first attempts in alchemy may be usually along the herbal line, and so you'll work with the herbal kingdom for several years at least, making herbal medicines, which are then taken by yourself, and they go in and purify the various organs and systems within you, and then you make improvements to those. And now you're getting an even more spiritualized material. You're taking that in, and over a time, that's making changes, transformations inside of you. And then maybe you'll graduate to some simple mineral or metal works, and those are even more powerful medicines. They go in and cause a whole spiritual revolution inside of you, because they're awakening much more subtle levels of energy within you. You become a conductor, in a sense, of more spiritualized energies, and it causes an awakening. Suddenly your chakras are getting cleared out, your energy system is on the rise, and so the alchemical process is one that happens on the operator himself. You know, over the years of preparing medicines, of working with nature, and understanding how things are actually operating, you can make adjustments to your own system, because we're all unique, and so we all need a little bit different elixir of life. We're not all the same, you know, and we see this all the time. People have different needs, and so one person may need something that is much more fiery in nature, whereas another person may need to cool down their fire because they have way too much. So alchemy teaches how to address each person as an individual, and how their alchemical purification, you know, this whole salva coagula, the spagyric process, takes place within them on a personal level. So it's not one pill covers all. It's a little bit different for each person. There are elixirs and formulas for elixirs that have been passed down for generations that are widely used among alchemists. A lot of them are herbal in nature, others are mineral and metallic preparations, and these can cause changes and awakening of different centers of the body, different systems come into line. Your whole physical and energetic system, you know, becomes more balanced, and suddenly you see much more light.
Well, Robert, what would you recommend for the lay person who is very interested in getting into alchemy and using it as a tool to open and awaken themselves spiritually? Would you recommend ordering a certain formula over the internet, white powder gold, or would you recommend perhaps making an appointment with an alchemist such as yourself so the appropriate formula can be prescribed for you?
Well, I'm not convinced that it works that way. You know, even the old masters say that you have to get your hands dirty. You have to do the work. You can't just walk into the alchemist shop and suddenly be renewed. There are medicines that will help you and cure you, certainly. But, you know, if you want to take the alchemical path, then you have to walk the book of nature. You have to do the work, because the work itself is one that does the initiation, one that does the real work inside of you. And so you need to learn alchemy. And so there are different sources to go by. Frater Albertus has his classic textbook on alchemy called the Alchemist Handbook. That's still available. There's another very good book by Manfred Junius called the Practical Handbook of Plant Alchemy. And then I have my own two books, Real Alchemy and The Way of the Crucible. Brad Robertus and Manfred Junius's works deal mainly with plant alchemy, and that's where people should start out if they want to tread the path of the alchemist, because plants are very forgiving of mistakes that we all make in the laboratories. So you get your feet wet and you learn laboratory techniques that will build your skills so that you can work safely in the mineral realm, because a lot of the mineral works of alchemy are very dangerous. No kidding around about that. Some of them can kill you flat out if you're not prepared or skilled in operating things. So you should know what you're doing before you would even approach mineral and metallic alchemical projects. They're the most powerful things in alchemy. So to begin with, you would start with some theory and practice in herbal alchemy. And that will teach you as you go along what the alchemical path is all about. They have a way of initiating you regardless of yourself or in spite of yourself. The work itself has a profound effect on your psyche. Regardless of whether you take the medicines or not, doing the actual laboratory work causes revelations and changes inside of you. You're attuned with the work, and you're not just working on something in a flask. It's working on you as well.
So it sounds like what you're saying, Robert, is that unless a person wants to become an alchemist and create their own formulas, they shouldn't even bother with alchemy. They shouldn't order an alchemical formula online, or they shouldn't, they shouldn't purchase one from their local alchemist. That they themselves need to be producing their own formulas. Is that what you're saying?
Not entirely. No. The alchemical formulas and medicines, spagyric tinctures that you can buy online, are excellent medicines. They're very powerful, but to apply them correctly, you have to have some idea of what it is you're doing. you know, we each have an elemental balance. And if we start taking the wrong medicine, just like any other over-the-counter drug, you take the wrong medicine, it makes things worse. So you have to have some concept of what you're taking and why you're taking it. And to do that, you should understand some theory of alchemy and how your particular constitution is arranged. And from that, from alchemy, you can learn about yourself. It's really an exploration of yourself and an improvement of your own self. And so you have to gain a certain amount of self-knowledge, which the study of alchemy will bring about. I'm not saying that, you know, the things you can buy online or on the in the various stores are not useful or not not recommended. In fact, they are highly recommended because many of them will cure diseases, whereas modern medicine, you know, they have problems. A lot of people are getting discouraged with modern medicine. Seems like you can't watch a television program without you know, a drug commercial coming on, and they introduce the drug in the first 15 seconds, and the last 45 seconds is all about the side effects of the drug. Alchemical medicines are usually surprisingly free of any kind of side effects of any kind. And so they're very powerful medicinal agents in the right hands when you apply them correctly. There are a lot of outrageous claims, too. People are out there trying to sell their wares, saying that this is going to cure everything. You know, I'm sure you've seen, like, the white gold advertising cures for everything and an instant enlightenment. It doesn't happen that way. It takes time.
Well, why don't we stop right there and take a quick break, because I'm sure the audience would like to know more about the white powder gold. So we'll take a short break and be right back with more alchemy with our guest today, Robert Allen Bartlett. So don't go away.
Am I the only one to see that something's not right? control, but I am open, that's no between right and wrong. And the way the world is changing so gradual, it's so easy to forget about principles. So, I don't wanna be the one to blame. Everybody does the same stuff, I've done the same. But what will it take to change what we already know? We already know. Once upon a time,
welcome back. We've been talking with modern alchemist Robert Allen Bartlett about alchemy in this modern era. If you'd like to know more about Robert, he has a website. It's www.realalchemy.org. And if you have any questions for him, feel free to call our toll-free line at 888-815-9756. Now, we are the International Order of Gnostic Templars. If you'd like to know more about us and what we're up to, you can visit our website, which is www.gnostictemplars.org, and you can sign up to become an associate member. You can sign up for our 18-lesson Gnostic Templar e-course. You can find out what we're doing. We're having a conference next year. Actually, probably two or three of them. We're working towards reuniting all the initiatic societies around the planet. Our first one will be in Italy in April, and you're all welcome to actually come by and sit in on that conference. It'll be the first one in a couple hundred years, from what I understand. So this is the kind of work that we're doing, and if you'd like to be part of what we're doing, please visit our website and sign up for our e-news, monthly e-news, and sign up for everything else we have going on there. And it'd be great to hear from you all. So getting back, Robert, to our discussion, we ended talking about a little bit about the white powder gold. So tell me your honest opinion about this white powder gold. Should we all go out and get some or take more of it, or should we, you know, just not even bother? What would you say?
Well, my personal opinion, it's an interesting material. I wouldn't say it's traditional alchemy. I've looked for references to that or to a similar preparation in a lot of the old texts, and I don't really see it. I'd say it's more akin to some of the Ayurvedic processes, which is Indian alchemy, as far as how it's prepared and all. I've prepared some, and I've taken it. I wasn't impressed personally, although I've known people who say they take it daily and they are very impressed as far as their energy levels. But there's a lot of hype about it right now, and a lot of people are glowing over it, and other people are pushing it aside as nothing. I take a middle stand. I think it's interesting and should be further investigated. So, you know, in my work, I prepare materials, and being employed as a chemist, I have access to some very high quality instrumentation, and a lot of the work I do is to prepare materials and then try to analyze them chemically, because before they're even looked at in any kind of medical context, people are going to ask, well, what are they? What's in it? You know, what's it composed of? So this is a lot of the work I do. I have stacks of analytical data on various alchemical experiments I've done over the years, and eventually hope to make that available in another book or maybe two. There's so much data. I've examined the white gold, and it's pretty nondescript. Like, you know, the texts say, it's very hard to analyze it. But like I say, also, I wasn't all that impressed with it. Personally, I found herbal and mineral tinctures from traditional alchemical texts, which are, I thought, far superior as far as their effects and medicinal qualities. So, I don't know. I'm in the middle road. I'd say they're worthy of further investigation, but I don't think they're up to all the hype that's out there about them.
Well, I think there are people out there that would like to take something like white powdered gold to actuate their inner alchemical unfoldment. Is there something out there that you would recommend for these people?
I would recommend starting with a regimen of herbal tinctures first, and that's pretty much the guidance given by sages past, in that the herbs are very gentle. They'll start cleaning out the physical tissues and the subtle energetic channels in the body. So what's generally recommended is you start with what they call the seven basics, and these are seven different herbal tinctures, one for each specific planet. So there are herbs which are ruled by the sun, herbs that are ruled by the moon, herbs that are ruled by Mars, and so forth. And what you would do is select an herb for each of the planets. So you would have a sun herb elixir, a moon herb elixir, all the way to Saturn herb elixirs. And you would take one of those each day corresponding to the particular planet. So a Sunday, you would take your sun herb. Monday, you would take your moon herb. Tuesday is ruled by Mars, so you would take your Mars herb. Wednesdays, you would take your Mercury-ruled herb, all the way up to Saturday, when you take your Saturn-ruled herb. And what this does is gently go in system by system, organ by organ, cleaning out all the impurities that we've accumulated over the years of abusing our bodies, and starts to gently purge all that out in a very systematic way, one by one, and then breathes in new life to those particular systems. And so this begins a whole process of alchemy. In fact, in the classes we teach, that's the beginning. You start by learning how to make your own seven basics. It's very simple. People can do it. You probably have most of the stuff at home right now to do these things. They're not like you need some big musty laboratory with expensive laboratory equipment. We try to teach ways that people can use very common things, just like the ancients did. They didn't have all this fancy glassware. They use simple items, and we try to teach how to use that same kind of simplistic approach in making your own seven basics. Very easy to do. You make a set of seven basics, and you proceed to take those for the year. And while those are active, or you know, you're actively using those, you pursue other alchemical experiments which are improvements on those same seven basics. And so in that way, you don't have to know details about your astrological chart or your particular physical or psychological or spiritual composition. These will go in systematically and treat each of the organ systems one by one, start flushing out all the stuff, all the impurities you've accumulated, and start to rebalance and re-energize your systems one by one, and prepare you for taking more powerful things. You don't want to go out and get, you know, a very strong metal tincture and start taking that, because that could flush things out a little bit too quick, and you end up getting sicker than you are, you know, at a particular point. So you want to start gently, start mobilizing these impurities and doing the same purification. So it's the spagyric technique applied to you. You're separating out all the dross. You're purifying your systems, your body, and allowing more subtle types of energy to start flowing where they're supposed to be flowing. So we don't get all these buildups of toxins restricting the flow of subtle energies, and suddenly we start getting a disease associated with obstructed flow of energies to a certain part. These alchemical medicines, the seven basics, will go in and start flushing that out, start attuning yourself to a more subtle energy flow.
Well, I'm sure there are people out there that aren't ready to take to the path of alchemy, or perhaps they just don't feel a calling in that regard. I'm probably one of them. So could you recommend a source for these seven tinctures? Is there one?
Yeah, you can go to the Crucible catalog in the International Alchemy Guild. They have what's called the Crucible, and that's their kind of their storefront. And there are a number of very excellent tinctures and medicines out there that people are providing. And you can go in and they will explain what planets are ruled by and what they are recommended for as far as purification or curing certain diseases even. Although they can't make medical claims directly, but herbs have been used for centuries. And you can go through the product lists on the catalog. I would recommend, like I say, starting off with some simple herbal tinctures and proceeding from there. They have a full line of alchemical medicines. And as you study them, study the catalog, they'll direct you to which ones you may be most interested in. You know, say you have, arthritis, there'll be particular medicines specifically for treating arthritis or that type of a complaint. Say you have heart problems, so there'll be medicines directed for that. And they'll give you specific information. And there are a lot of people out there who are producing these in the ancient tradition, and their products are very good. So I would recommend looking at the Crucible catalog and checking out what they have, and you may get a hold of the actual suppliers, and they have even more extended catalogs than what they supply in the Crucible catalog.
Well, do you think that intuitively people will know what is their next step? Were they to get on a regime of taking these seven elixirs regularly, that they would know when and how to take their next step in alchemy when the time came?
I believe they will. You know, as they become more familiar with the materials and the products start working on them, things will come out. They will understand where they need to shore up their defenses, where they need a little more energy, where they need to back off. The alchemical medicines have a way of triggering an innate knowledge that we have of, you know, where we're out of balance. And so I think that starting off simply, clearing out the cobwebs, things will become clearer. And as you become familiar with what's out there and what's available, you'll understand what is your next step, what you should start taking next. But I highly recommend always to at least study some of the theory. You know, I mean, even if you never set foot in a laboratory, there are a lot of excellent sources at bookstores or online where you can study alchemy theory, and it will prepare you for what to expect and what to plan for and what your basic steps should be.
Well, I imagine along with taking your regular tinctures or formulas that you also probably practice some other spiritual disciplines. If you do, what are they?
It's a personal choice. Alchemy is really compatible with any philosophical or religious system. You know, once you understand the basics, it's a universal language. So if you're interested in ceremonial magic, certainly you can. There are operators who charge everything. I mean, they purify, banish things before operating. They clean their space, erect a sacred space around their working area. They set up a whole temple atmosphere in the laboratory. Or if they're just taking an elixir, they may use that as their Eucharist, in a sense. Have that on the altar, their completed tincture, and they'll do a ritual to invoke the particular power, say the sun. So they'll invoke solar powers or deities to bless and charge the medicine to act in a certain capacity to, I don't know, heal a heart disease or deal with father issues or working with superiors, any kind of solar activity. They may charge up the elixir and then consume it just as they would an elixir in a ceremonial sense. And the elixir will be even more powerful because these elixirs are very impressionable as far as magical techniques. And so any type of magic, ceremonial magic, if you're an operator in that sense, or if you prefer Eastern techniques of breath control, mantra, you can incorporate the taking of tinctures and these alchemical medicines into your daily regimen very easily.
Well, I think one reason that people are hesitant to get involved with the alchemical path today is that they don't have a model. They don't have a teacher that has reached a high spiritual goal through alchemy. Do you yourself know of anyone in recent history or a colleague or whoever has actually achieved a very high spiritual status of, you know, spiritual enlightenment through the path of alchemy?
Alchemists are few and far between. They tend to keep to themselves, really. There are a few schools and interest in alchemy is growing. You know, we have a school here that we've started in the last few years, and we teach classes on a regular basis each year here in the Pacific Northwest. There are a couple of schools, I believe, in back east, another one in Portland just opening up. The International Alchemy Guild can put you in contact with other people and operators, and they have a forum where they can share information and experiences. Whether there's a main guru out there who's reached enlightenment, I can't think of anyone offhand that I would say is the spiritual master of the century. But there are people who are interested in alchemy and teaching alchemy and continuing the tradition so it doesn't die out or become some pop psychology buzzword. Laboratory alchemy has a long history and shouldn't be allowed to die out just because people have forgotten it or there's no one to instruct them in the way. So I believe that the way should be made clear that people can see these things. They're not as difficult as people make them out to be. You know, some of the advanced works in alchemy are very difficult as far as labor and skill requirements, but that's why you start off simply and work your way up. And like I said earlier, that people are often afraid that they're going to have this big laboratory that's going to cost them hundreds of dollars, put a second mortgage on the house. That's not true. You know, I try to work as simply and economically as I can, even though I have, you know, very expensive laboratory equipment. I prefer to use very simple methods and techniques that the ancients followed, and they're very easy to do. It's not
well. Speaking of the ancients, obviously there were some very highly advanced, spiritually advanced alchemists of the Middle Ages. Saint Germain being one of them. It seems as though, if that's the case, that possibly, perhaps, that wisdom, that knowledge of these advanced alchemists would have, you know, filtered down into today, and that maybe somebody has these formulas. I know that I spoke to Dennis Hauk not too long ago, and he told me that he had actually initially gone over to Prague, because that area was very concentrated with alchemists at one time, and he actually, I guess, even met an alchemist over there. I mean, do you know other people, or have you yourself had been drawn to go over to Europe to try to discover what's there, if there is still something remaining from, you know, ancient times?
Well, Prague was a hot spot for alchemy for quite a while. In fact, the Avenue of the Goldmakers is still there on display as a historical curiosity, but most of the old texts are available online, and to go out and find an alchemist who is going to tell you, you know, the secrets just, you know, on a visit, you know, on a whim to go to Europe and meet an alchemist, he's not going to sit down and tell you all the secrets that he's found out. You have to become apprentice to him. And the same in India. You know, they still practice alchemy in India, and there are masters there who, if they don't find a suitable disciple to pass on their secrets, they prefer to die with their secrets. And so that information gets lost. And that's happened all through time. There are people who try to subdue alchemy. Alchemy has been subdued by the powers that be numerous times in history. People have tried to stamp it out because it offered people, you know, the masses, too much freedom to seek their own spirituality. They weren't able to subjugate those people to their church or doctrine, and so they tried to purge alchemy many times. But most of the old texts and classic experiments and philosophies about alchemy are pretty much available online, like no other time. You know, growing up, I always wished that I could find all these various texts, and they were very obscure and rare and hard to find, and cost hundreds of dollars if you lucked upon finding a text. And now most of them you can find online for free. You just download them and read them. But to read them, you have to have something of the key, and so you need to study some of the basic theory of alchemy to even understand what the books are talking about, because very often you'll spend 3 hours reading an alchemical text and then walk away wondering, what did I just read? I have no idea what I just read. I just wasted 3 hours of my life. I got nothing out of it. But there are keys to understanding what it is they're talking about. And that's where, you know, a classroom atmosphere really makes the difference. Alchemy has always been an oral tradition, and trying to discover the secrets of alchemy by yourself, by reading or studying things online, it's a long, arduous path. You know, without someone who's been there, who can tell you in a classroom situation, you know, oral tradition, sit down and say that this is what they're talking about, and these are what the symbols mean, and we can demonstrate in the laboratory. You know, you spend an hour in the laboratory with someone who's familiar with alchemy, it's worth days and days, weeks of reading and studying. It just shortens the whole process and things.
Well, we're getting short on time, Robert, but I did want to mention to the audience that you yourself are actively taking on students and giving classes where you are. Is that right?
Yes, we just finished a run of a Prima class. We had three Saturdays, which were eight-hour classroom times on theory. And then we spent a three-day intensive kind of alchemy camp out. It was a workshop here in the Pacific Northwest where we did the works, and people had hands-on experience, and they're very pleased with their results. They go home, and now they're making their own herbal tinctures. And the next class is graded up from that. We'll start working on more difficult projects and work our way up into mineral and metallic alchemy later on as a tertiary class. So it's a series of graded classes, very intense. The oral tradition carries on. We give recommendations on texts to read, and actually give CD on collected texts and works to read, and give you experiments that you can do at home and try this stuff out yourself.
So is the best way to find out about your classes and about what you're teaching to go to your website?
Yeah, realalchemy.org. I can hold about a dozen people at a time in the classroom that we have right now, and hope to expand that in the future.
Well, great. Well, it's been just a wonderful pleasure to have you on the show today, and I hope that you can come back on again. There's certainly lots more to talk about.
Yeah, I would love to. Yeah.
Well, great. It's been a really wonderful pleasure, Robert, and great good luck to you in your work now. Somebody needs to keep the ball rolling with that.
Absolutely.
So the rest of you, I'll be back next week, same time, same place, with another edition of The Guardians of the Holy Grail. And always remember that the true grail is always right inside of you. Bye for now.